Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Fight Like a Girl. I'm Rav, and with me is the gorgeous Ella, and we are back. How was your freedom week, Ella?
Hello. It was so good. So good.
Tell me everything. What did you get up to?
It felt weird, A, leaving my LGA and not feeling like a criminal. It felt weird sitting in a bar and getting waited on. Like all these luxuries that we just took for granted.
Did you feel like people were checking your vaccination status when you were going to restaurants and stuff?
Yeah, some, not all though. I think there's still been a couple, one or two places that I walked into that they just seemed, bless them, like a bit overwhelmed. And it was like, because they've, you know, they've got to check A, your check-in on the app and your vaccination status, and I guess they're also like have to be hyper aware of how many people they're letting in and all of the, you know, rules around the square meterage and stuff. So I feel like it's a lot for these poor people to all do at once. So definitely some places they didn't look at the vaccination status. What about you?
Yeah, I got out and about on Friday night. I didn't really go too hard the rest of the weekend because I was pretty dead after that.
Baby steps.
Yeah, exactly. I met up with some friends from work who I'd never met in person before.
Oh, nice.
And it was so weird seeing them face to face because I've only ever seen them from the shoulders up. And they were so tall.
Oh, really? And you're already tall.
Yeah, I was envisioning them. They were guys, but I was envisioning them to be like, I don't know why, just not that tall.
Yeah.
And they were huge. And I was just like, oh, this is so bizarre.
It's so like, weird, isn't it? Particularly like when you, that's your life with the remote working. And then you just meet and you're like, I did not. It's like when you see a celebrity who's either really short or really tall and you're just like, this is not what I imagined.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was really fun. We kind of started off in Darling Harbour for anyone who's from Sydney and is familiar with the area, and kicked on to Surry Hills, and I got home at like 4, oof, I think. Nice. And yeah, I was paying for it the rest of the weekend, but no regrets.
No regrets.
But yeah, I think, you know, coming out of lockdown has been really, really exciting. Like you said, just the little things that we took for granted before. I still have some concerns about like the Queensland side of things because, as like you, I've got family in Queensland, and I know Anastasia Palaszczuk this week sort of released a bit of a roadmap as well as to when we can expect to potentially go back to Queensland. But I'm just you know, it's still quite daunting thinking about it because for me, all of my family is there. I don't have any family here either, yeah. right? And I just feel like I'm really thankful that up until this point they've all been like really healthy because I had a friend from work who had her grandma pass away and she's in Victoria. Like my friend is in Victoria and her grandma was like the funeral for her grandma was in Queensland and she couldn't go. So it's pretty crazy, right? Like when you think about it that way. And that's a grandparent. So I, you know, have just been so thankful that my parents have been okay during this time. And it did, though, get me thinking about just like the morality of parents and how we kind of gloss over that sometimes or don't really think about it too much. And totally. I know for you, Ella, you lost your dad quite suddenly when you were younger. And it is one of those things that people don't often talk about. Or for me being your friend, I know I've told you, like, I don't know how to talk about it with you. So, you know, I think it's really important to talk about stuff like this, especially as we get older, because I think we are kind of getting to that age where, you know, parents either start getting sick or you just don't know when things can kind of happen. Totally. You know what I mean? Totally. So I just want to say before we kick off, like, thank you for being open to talking about it because I'm sure it's a lot.
Thanks, Rav. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's definitely something that I have sadly noticed over the last, you know, 18 months with COVID. A lot more friends of mine are experiencing loss. Their, you know, parents of one of their parents has passed away, whether that be overseas or here or whatever. And it's just made me acutely aware that it's sort of, as you said, it's the time for a lot of people where it's sort of at that age where it's starting to, you know, starting to happen. And I, as you've already sort of said, unfortunately did lose a parent when I was a bit younger. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily know how to, the people going through it don't know how to respond with that grief. And also the people who are, you know, friends with that person or in relationship with that person also don't know how to broach it, just as you sort of said before. So I think it serves as a, like, you know, good reminder to maybe talk about that and share my experience so maybe it helps other people who are going through something similar.
So probably a great place to start would be tell us about your dad and tell us about your relationship with him.
Oh, my dad. So I know I always like to preface this by saying I know that when someone passes away, we tend to romanticize them as a person and romanticize those memories and things like that. But with my dad, like, he genuinely was an amazing man and we had a, like, wonderful relationship. Yeah, he was just this larger-than-life character. His name was Mike. He was just this larger-than-life character and, you know, could chew the ear off anyone. I'd often go down to, you know, the local shops with him in our little hometown of Samford and you'd get stuck there for an hour and a half while he spoke to some random person he met, you know, in the checkout or whatever. And it was just like, you know, you knew that if you went down to the shops with Dad that you wouldn't be coming home for a couple of hours, even though it was like a five-minute trip.
Yeah.
So he was, very gregarious. Just lovely man. And, you know, I'm lucky I got 18 years with him. So you
were 18 when he passed away?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Can you share a little bit about, if you're comfortable talking about it, you know, what happened on the day that you lost your dad?
Yeah. I mean, as is always the case with these awful sudden things, it was just sort of like a normal, nice day, in February. It was like the 24th of February.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually my first day of university. So I'd been to uni that morning, I think, and then I'd come home and I was actually doing a driving lesson. My mum was taking me to my little driving lesson with the guy that, you know, drives you around. My conductor, what is it? Conductor?
Instructor.
Instructor, God, conductor. and so I was on my way to the driving kind of practice, and I walked past my dad's bedroom and he was laying on his bed. And I remember thinking, so this was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I think, or maybe it was a little bit earlier. And I remember thinking, oh, it's strange that my dad's, you know, laying down in the middle of the day. And Mum said, oh, you know, poor dad, he's, you know, had some bad news at work and he's just, you know, he's really exhausted. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I just have that vivid memory of like just walking past his room and seeing him sort of laying on his side and seeing his back was to me kind of thing. Anyway, off we went to the driving lesson and whatnot, and came back and my mum had picked me up from the driving lesson, and we were 5 minutes from home. We stopped in at the service station near our house, and Mum filled up the car and she sent me in to go and pay. While I was in there, my mum got a call from this random number on her mobile, and the person said, are you Mike's partner? And Mum was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, he's had a bit of a fall. And Mum was like, what? And so anyway, what I failed to mention was like a few hours had gone by and Dad had gotten up and gone to university as well. So he was actually studying at the same university as me, like updating his IT credentials. So he is like a mature age student, and was also sort of back for his first few days of uni. So this person was basically saying, Mike's had a bit of a fall. I'm just with him at university. I think he's going to maybe go to the hospital, so I'll give you a call back once I know what's happening. So we were all just sort of like, I was like, oh gosh, had a fall. That's awful. We just sort of thought that Dad had like tripped over or something. We were waiting for this person to call us back. I think half an hour went by, still nothing. So we were like, started calling the number. No one was answering. Like an hour went by, still nothing. And so we just weren't hearing back from this person.
Where were you guys when this was all playing out?
In the servo.
So you just were waiting there for.
We were in the car. Yeah, in the car, sitting there, and then we just thought, oh, we better sort of went. Okay, well, he's at the uni campus at Gardens Point, so he's going to be at the RBH, is the closest hospital. So we were like, I guess we'll just drive there. Like, we don't have any other way. Like, what are we going to do? So we just drove to the hospital blindly at this point, trying to call our sisters and sort of say, oh, like, just saying, you know, we got this call. Like, you know, we think he's fine, but we just, we haven't heard back from this person. So we're going to.
Because it was just you and your mum, right?
Yeah, just me and my mum. Yeah. So what ended up happening was we got to this hospital and we just walked into the emergency thing and we were like, hey, we think our dad might have been admitted here. We got this phone call. We haven't heard anything. You know, can you just let us know? Eventually these people came over and said, oh yes, he's being worked on. He's being worked on at the university and he'll be coming through in an ambulance. And we were just like, oh, okay, Jesus. Like, again, still no real details, but saying he's being worked on. We started to get worried, of course. By this point, we'd sort of called all my sisters and were like, you guys need to try and get here. And so at this point, we were waiting in the emergency room for an hour or so and still hadn't heard anything. And then we got ushered into this room and this sort of social worker was assigned to us. And they just kept saying, again, there was just no details being said at all. It was just sort of us being ushered into this room and they were like, oh, this is, you know, such and such. She's a social worker here. And we were just like, okay. And at this point, just really thinking, what the hell is going on?
Were you worried at that point or were you just a bit?
When that social worker came in, I saw my mum's face and I remember she said, this is not good. Like that was like the penny drop moment of like, okay, what the hell? I finally got onto my sister Leah and was just like, by that. And that's when I knew as well, because once Leah answered the phone, I just started crying. I was like, we don't, does, like, and it just couldn't get out what I was trying to say because I also didn't know what was going on. That's when I knew because I was like, the emotion took over me and I couldn't even get my words out and I had to pass the phone to my mum. And she said, Leah, you know, get to the hospital. This has happened. We don't know what's going on, but just get here. Finally, my sister arrived and then so all three of my sisters were there, myself and my mum. And I remember this social worker was then like, so is everyone here now? And we were like, yep. And then at that point, these two, like almost immediately, these two police officers walked in and they just said, we're sorry Michael's passed. And that was literally like, that was all we were, that's all we said. And we just like, so it went from nothing to your dad's dead. And it, we just like, you know, when you see those really like visceral reactions in, you know, movies and things like that, where people just collapse to the floor and like wail and everything like that, that's literally what happened to every single one of us, you know. And yeah, I just remember my knees being on the floor and just wailing into my hands. And I remember my mum was just like saying, no, 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 and like sort of fell to her side. And it was just like so awful. From that point, we obviously got a few more details, and they basically said that Dad had had a heart attack walking along the footpath of the university and had died pretty much instantly. We had been waiting for, about 3 hours by the time we got told.
Oh, wow.
And what they'd been doing was waiting to get his body here with his belongings and stuff.
So when they said they were working on him, they weren't really?
They weren't. But that's, you know.
Was he actually at the hospital at that point? Or you don't?
Well, yeah, I think he'd been pronounced dead already at the scene. And so they had, you know, put him in an, like put his body in an ambulance and, you know, driven it to the hospital.
Mm.
Because not long after that, they like, you know, handed us his belongings.
I mean, I know that those sorts of things for people in those professions like happen so often. So I don't know if it's like meant to be that transactional, but it almost like you telling me this, I've never been in your shoes. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't have anything to compare it to, but just you, just the way that you described it, it seems so transactional.
Mm.
I don't want to say insensitive, but almost insensitive. Like, I don't know. To me, it just, I don't know if I'm, you know, led astray a little bit because of TV shows and movies and stuff, but you always see like doctors coming out and telling people that sort of news. And it's, to me, it just seems crazy that you just had these two police officers just drop that on you like that. So obviously it happened quite suddenly for him. Do you know of like any health issues or anything, like, or was it very out of the blue for you guys?
I mean, he was 58, so he certainly wasn't like young, but he was also 58 is very young, die of a heart attack, right? So he was, you know, as we learned, quite stressed. He was a, you know, self-employed like software computer programmer, so he just, you know, worked really hard, and like any self-employed person, took a lot of that, you know, stress on. I think he had high cholesterol and all those sorts of things that, you know, men in that age bracket have, but for all intents and purposes, he was, you know, a relatively healthy guy, really active still, like did lots of stuff around the house. So yeah, there was nothing really that indicated that that's something that was going to happen, as, you know, is often the case with heart attacks.
You know, there's no doubt that this came as a huge shock to all of you, just, you know, especially the way that the news was delivered to you guys in the hospital. Talk to us a little bit about like how you dealt with those initial stages of processing that information. Did you lean on your sisters a lot?
You sort of go into like survival mode. I mean, it's crazy just the things you have to do when the, you know, these awful things happen to you, right? Like the, your world has just come crashing down around you, but like you still have to get in the car and drive home, like after hearing this awful news. Like, do you know what I mean? Just all these things. And like, I had to call up my job and tell them that I won't, you know, won't be coming in tomorrow. Like all of these bizarre things that you sort of like, you know, when you're driving home and the radio's playing some happy song and like you're just in this shock, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I remember what happened that night. It was because it was a Tuesday, and I remember just all of these people came over, like a lot of my mum's friends, all of our friends. I remember the house was packed with like 30 plus people. And I remember my mum's friends were just pouring my mum all of this wine, and I remember my mum pretty much like passed out at like 9 o'clock in her bed, just, you know, engulfed by grief and, you know, exhaustion and see wine. And yeah, you're just kind of in shock. And I think all of us sisters dealt with it in a different way. I, in a weird way, because I knew how hard my dad worked and I knew what he would want for us, I didn't go down the path of like, I just kept saying to myself, Dad would not want you to be, you know, curled up in bed for however long crying about him being gone. He'd want you to get yourself together, keep going to uni, you know. And I think that's what a lot of us did. Like, I know my mum's very stoic and is very much of that ilk as well, where you know, no point sitting around crying about it. Get yourself up, get yourself together and get on with life. And I think I just drew strength from my mum and my dad, and just, I think I had 2 weeks off work and 2 weeks off uni and went straight back into sort of normal life after that.
So you mentioned your mum briefly then and how stoic she is. Can you talk a little bit about like how she dealt with it? I mean, I'm sure there was some sort of degree of her putting on a brave face for you guys as well, given you guys were quite young. Yeah, I can't imagine it's easy to lose your partner.
And you're absolutely right, Rav. Like, it's, we both lost the same person, but we had completely different relationships with them.
Yeah.
And so my grief is going to be completely different to my mom's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like so important to recognize that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. She put on a brave face. She never cried in front of anyone except us. She told us that, like, she basically holds off crying for as long as she can until the door's closed and she's, you know, alone and able to have that release. So she definitely put on a brave face, because my mum would have been like in her, I think she was in her 40s still when my dad died.
So young. So,
and she'd been with my dad since she was early 20s. So
like half her life.
Yeah. Half her life, the love of her life, gone in an instant. You know, there's just huge adjustments with that, you know, just it being in the house, like
everything would be reminding her.
That's right.
And you guys as well.
Yeah. My mum actually still lives in the family home that my dad built, that we've lived in our entire lives. So there's, you know, constant reminders, which is good and bad. So, but mostly as time goes on, it's mostly good.
It must have been really hard at first.
Oh, yeah. And it's crazy what things like remind you of him or what set you off, like the smell of, like for me, I just remember how many, the house was just filled with flowers around that time, which is lovely. But for me, the smell of like lilies and fresh flowers, anytime I smell flowers, it's like immediately back to that sort of week of like, oh, sorry, those couple of weeks of just being in a grief trance. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting what you know, like smells and memories, you know, trigger different.
So when you say it brings you back to that though, do you feel like now, because I'm assuming, I know I've sent you flowers for your birthday before. So when you smell flowers and stuff now, is it like a negative association still? I know like it's a negative time in your life, but despite you going back there mentally, when you smell things like flowers and stuff, does it make you not want things like that in your life?
Really good question. No, it doesn't. It's actually strange to say this like calming, peaceful feeling. Because, like I said, it takes me right back to being in the house with my mom, all my sisters and my mom, like all of us. You know what it's like when you're on the like cusp of adulthood and you're all doing your own things, and then all of a sudden you're all back in the house together and you're spending, you know, every day together for the like last couple of weeks while we're obviously in serious grief and obviously organizing funeral things and all that sort of stuff. So it was like, in a way, it was this nice memory of being with my family, reminiscing about dad. Because I remember we had like music playing and I was like making all these arrangements for dad's funeral. And it was just like, we were kind of in a way celebrating his life. So those, the smell of particularly lilies, it is quite a nice, peaceful, peaceful feeling for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like you said, there's things that you wouldn't even think of that would take you back there, right? Lilies are my favorite flowers. Now I'm just gonna be I'm gonna have that association, I feel like, in my mind, with your dad. Okay, so you said you kind of went back to, you know, as much of a routine as possible, kind of 2 weeks later. What were the next sort of 6 to 12 months like for you and your family?
Another really good question, because I remember someone who was quite astute saying to me at the time, there's going to come a moment where the flowers stop, the cards stop, the phone calls stop, and that's when you're going to need a friend. Like, that's when you're going to need people the most, is when all of that lovely stuff that comes with in the first few weeks of losing someone, when that stops, that's when you're going to need a friend. And that's exactly right. Like after the, you know, 6 to 12 month mark, you sort of expected to have gotten on with it, in a way gotten over it. You feel like if you haven't sort of progressed from there, that you're going to get judged. And I guess also it's just got to come a time, a point where, sorry, there's got to come a point where you stop talking about it and, you know, get on with your life, right? So for me, I just, I was obviously a year into uni at that stage and trying to, you know, stick on the straight and narrow. And but it was still, that grief was still very much there. Like, it doesn't diminish.
And I remember you and I were talking about this recently as well. It's like that photo that circulates sometimes where it's like a ball in a jar.
Yeah.
The ball stays the same size, but the jar just gets bigger, right? So it's like your grief, the size of your grief doesn't change.
Exactly.
It's just everything else around you just
grows. It grows around, you grow around the grief.
Exactly.
And that's it. When I remember when I saw that, I was like, oh, that just explains it so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Because people genuinely used to think it was that you're, you know, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and you eventually almost get over it. But it's no, it's like it stays exactly the same. It has exact same impact on your life. It's just that you grow around it. So, and that's the best way I can describe it.
You said, like, you know, somebody mentioned to you that that's when you're going to need a friend, right? When the flowers and cards and stuff stop. Were you in a relationship when this happened, or were you single?
I was in a very tumultuous relationship on and off. But he was very supportive at the time. But yeah, it's funny because the friends that you, and I don't mean to, like, you know, call anyone out or anything like that, but what that person said to me about, like, when you're going to need a friend was so true. And I remember the people that I thought would still be there for me in a year's time weren't. And you're like, I was so surprised at the people that were there for me in a year's time.
When you say they weren't there for you, they weren't there for you to talk about that sort of thing, or they just weren't in your life anymore?
Weren't, I guess, aware that I would still be going through this in 12 months' time. And, like, just because it's been 12 months doesn't mean that I don't want to talk about it anymore, or, you know, that I'm not still a little bit fragile, or all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I think also, not to defend them, like, I don't know them at all, but I think it's more also, like, potentially a maturity thing, because I feel like as we get older, we start to understand the importance of needing to talk about things and stuff. So
totally,
regardless of how much time it's been, like, I know for me, having not been through something like that, probably the most traumatic thing that I've been through was all my divorce stuff, right? And it's like, that's 2 years on now, and I tend not to talk about it that often, but I know that if I want to, my friends will be there for me for that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think with that definitely just came with maturity though. So maybe it might have been something like that, but I know we talk a lot about relationships on this podcast. So do you feel like losing your dad at such a young age impacted the way that you approach, like, your romantic relationships moving forward?
I think it did in the early stages. Like, I definitely, oh, it's awful to say, but I definitely think some guys I was with almost took advantage of the fact that I didn't have my dad around, and some of the treatment that I got from some guys was, I felt like if my dad was still around, they wouldn't have treated me like that.
Like what? Like, give us an example.
Like, if I had this, you know, because my dad was, as I said, this lovely, gregarious guy, but, like, he was also super protective of his four daughters. So I feel like he was this foreboding presence to any kind of guy that tried to come through the front door, right? And when you take that away and it's just my shy mum and all these, you know, these four girls who, you know, I just feel like I was treated badly because, like, there weren't going to be any consequences from my family, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's sad, but it kind of goes back to that whole concept of how we as women sometimes need a male figure with us to feel safe.
Yeah.
If you're walking down the street, right?
Yeah.
And that person doesn't need to be your brother or your dad. It's just a male presence. So I can imagine, like you said, you've got sisters, you've got your mum, there was no male in the house. Whether that be in the form of your dad or a brother. So people tend to lose that responsibility almost of, like, a duty of care towards someone totally. Sometimes I feel like.
Yeah. And I think I also, if my dad had been around as well, like, he wouldn't have let me tolerate some of the things I tolerated. Like, he'd be, well, what are you doing here? Like, you know, you gotta, so, whereas I didn't have him there. And so I just sort of let things, I let a few things go to the keeper that maybe I shouldn't have. Mm. So, yeah.
What do you think you miss the most about your dad?
I think I miss, it's really sad that he, well, it's bittersweet that he passed away, as I said, when we were like on the sort of precipice of adulthood. Like, he passed away 2 weeks after our 18th birthday, and we hadn't seen much of him in those 2 weeks because he'd been in New Zealand for work. And so I was really excited about like kind of going to that next stage of our lives together as like adults, like, because he'd worked his absolute ass off to get us to where we were, right? Like, as I said, he was self-employed, worked his fucking guts out, and sent us to, you know, all four of us to a private school so that we could have an like, education that, like, he didn't have, and have, you know, opportunities that he didn't have. And I feel like he just, you know, that's sort of the analogy of, like, collapsing at the finish line kind of thing. Like, he got us there and then he didn't get to see where we went from there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that's, for me, the saddest thing because, yeah, he, like, everything that I do and everything my sister does is with him in mind, because we just always recognize how hard he worked for us and the opportunities that he made sure that we had. And I think that's what I miss the most. I miss, you know, like, I think he would have been super chuffed to see, you know, where we all went with our careers, and I think he'd particularly find what I do for a job now quite interesting, and he'd really enjoy, you know, chatting to me about that at the end of the day. And so all those kinds of things I really miss. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that, you know, I don't know what happens after we pass away, but wherever he is, like, he would be so proud of you. Like, you are such an amazing woman.
Oh, thanks, Rav.
I feel like I'm getting emotional talking about this. What advice do you have for someone who might be struggling?
I think don't give up on help. So I remember I was encouraged to go to this university counsellor, and so I sort of went into my uni and, you know, got into this room with this counsellor, and I remember it was super noisy and there was all this construction going on and she could barely hear what I was saying. So there was just like, you know, a disconnect there. And then she also said something in the vein of trying to console me or make me feel better. She said, oh, if it makes you feel any better, he's not the first person to die on this campus. And I just remember going,
no.
What?
What the fuck?
Like, yeah.
That is so insensitive.
So insensitive. And I just was like, okay. So that was my bad experience, right? And I never went back to any, I've literally never spoken to anyone ever again. I've never seen a therapist, never seen a counselor, no one, because that experience was so bad.
Oh, I guess I can imagine.
And I also remember her telling, it was very odd. She was like, she kept questioning my age. I said, oh, I'm 18. And she kept saying, you're not 18. She's like, you seem a lot older than 18. And I was like, I don't know what else to
tell. And how is that relevant?
I know.
It's very, very bizarre. And so my advice would be to people who've had if that's been your first foray into trying to get help, don't give up. Go and see another person. Even if that person still isn't helping you in the way you need, try another person. Like, just don't give up, because that kind of help is really important. And if you don't get help at the time, it manifests later on in life. And that's not good for anyone. So that would be my advice, is, you know, get the help and don't give up.
Yeah, I think that's really, really helpful advice. What about for people's partners and loved ones in their lives? How do you think they can support someone who might be going through grief?
That's another really good question, and something that I, at the time, wish you would sort of whisper in the ears of some of my, like, loved ones and boyfriends and whatnot. As you said before, people don't know how to deal with grief, right? Like, if you're around it and you're not directly involved in it, it's, you don't know what to do. You're walking on eggshells. Do you bring it up? Do you not bring it up? It's like, it's hard to know what the right thing is, right? And again, every person's grief is different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like hard and fast rule. But I know for me, a lot of my friends and boyfriends would not talk about it. They thought that the best thing to do was just not mention it at all. So on, you know, on the anniversary of his passing, you know, on the 24th of February, I've had, yeah, boyfriends who just like ignore me on the day because they just don't know how to respond. And that's like the, for me, that was like the worst thing they could do, right? Yeah. When someone's passed away, all you've got are the memories. And so if you're not talking about that person reliving those memories, then like you've got nothing.
Exactly.
So for me, it's, you know, my advice would be to ask, you know, if you do have a friend or a partner who's lost, you know, someone very close to them, don't be afraid to ask them what they want from you, what support they want from you. Ask them, like, you know, do you want to tell me some of your favorite things about that person, or would you prefer that we, you know, or like, I know the anniversary is coming up, you know, what would you like to do on that day? Would you want to, go to your, you know, do you want to celebrate that person, or do you want to just go and watch a movie together and, you know, tune out for a bit? Like, yeah. Approach it with the person rather than just getting weird and, you know, shutting off. That would be my advice.
Yeah. So just making sure that you're asking them, like, what they need.
Yeah. What they need from you as a friend. Yeah. Or a partner.
No, I think that's super helpful. That combined with the whole therapy for the person who's actually going through it, I think is just so undervalued. Like,
yeah.
People just don't. And to your point, like, you know, when you said that if you have a run-in and it's not the right person for you, it's so normal for people who are seeking therapy for whatever reason to not just connect with the first person that you speak to. I can't agree with you more on that. Like, and I was talking to you about my friend whose grandma passed away. She's quite a new friend of mine too, and I approached that situation the same way because her and I typically speak, you know, daily because we work together. And, yeah, I was just like, because I am like, I don't know how to approach it with people because it is something until you've been through something quite big yourself, you don't really get what people are feeling.
That's right.
So, yeah, I was just like, what do you need? How do you need me to be? Do you not want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about it? You just tell me and then. And I think it makes a huge difference.
100%. You actually remind me of another point. I remember back then, like I said, there was all kinds of different, like, approaches to people helping me with my grief. So there was the people that ignored me, the people that did talk to me about it, which I really appreciate. And then there was the other kinds of people who would say, like, oh, I know what you're going through. I absolutely know what you're going through. Like, when my grandfather died, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Like, do not try to compare your grief with other people's grief. Like, it's not the same. Like, even my wonderful friend Killian, who may be listening, and well, Debbie, his partner, might be listening, you know, his mother tragically passed away last year during COVID. And, you know, he was on a flight when she passed away, like, so had to do the quarantine for 2 weeks. Like, awful, awful, awful situation, right? The most worst case scenario. I could never imagine the grief that Killian would be feeling with that, right? Like, I, even though I've lost a parent, it was under completely different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, the last thing I wanted to say to Killian was, I know what you're going through, because I, like, that's just not fair.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a really important point, is never try to compare your grief with other people's, because we all process it in different ways, and we all, you know, people die in different circumstances, so it's not the same.
Completely agree with you there. That's such a good point to make. Ella, thank you so much for being so raw and honest today. I'm sure that wasn't easy for you to talk about. I know we're now recording in person, so I could see the emotion on your face when you're talking about some of those things. And it's just a testament to, like, it doesn't matter how much time passes, it's these sorts of things are always really, really difficult to talk about. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Rav. No, I really appreciate it. Thanks for treading so carefully with me on this really sensitive topic, but I appreciate being given the platform to, you know, share my experience, particularly for anyone that's gone through it in the last, you know, 18 months with COVID and that sort of stuff. Like I said, I'm not comparing my experiences to anyone else, but if some of the things that we've spoken about today helps people process what's happened or deal with a friend who's lost a loved one, then I'm you know, happy to have helped in some way.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be hugely helpful to so many people. Thank you so much again, Ella, and thank you to everyone who tuned in today as well. We will catch you guys next time. Bye, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.